Hello, WWE Universe in the Philippines. This is Charlotte, and you're with Stan, Roe, and Raf on the SGP podcast. Woo!
Are you ready? You're listening to the SGP podcast.
You are listening to the longest-running weekly episodic Filipino wrestling podcast. This is the SGP podcast. Stan C and Raf Camus in the booth, proverbially, at Balay Camus this week. No Roe Moran this week. He is in Singapore for official business, probably to set up the Singapore Bureau of Smart Henry and the SGP podcast.
But other stuff.
Yeah, or other stuff. What's that business? Official business.
But it's official.
Yeah, he'll be coming back to Manila. We're recording this on Saturday, by the way, so he'll be coming back by tomorrow in time for PWR Live Homefront. We'll probably need him to be a grunt
in
the back.
He has young boy duties.
Yeah, he has young boy duties. Kasi resting lang naman din ang iniisip niya. Anyway, we're recording this on a Saturday because our special guest was only available today.
He only just arrived back in Manila.
Well, a few weeks ago, he came back to Manila, pero this was really his only free day. So, syempre, kami nag-adjust because he is a special guest. And he's one of the foreign invaders who, if you're listening to this right now, either you will see in a few hours at Homefront or who you already saw over the weekend at Homefront. Tengu makes his return to the SGP podcast. We'll catch up with him. We'll talk about everything he's been up to since we last had him on the podcast about a year ago. And we'll probably get his thoughts on what he's seen from the local scene since he got here. So all of that coming
up. He's seen so much. Like, I know he keeps tabs on us.
Yes, he does. He's been very supportive.
Not just PWR, but MWF as well. He's very in touch with the local scene. So he's seen the progression over time from afar.
Absolutely. Now, before we get into the Tengu interview and before we talk about the big events in the rings at WWE, let's talk about some news outside of the ring.
Ooh.
All right, let's start off with more rumors confirming or more rumors leading towards the notion that Shawn Michaels and Kane are both coming out for one more match. Quick thoughts on this. If you haven't been reading the dirt sheets, basically, at Crown Jewel in Saudi Arabia, it's going to be Shawn Michaels and Triple H versus the Brothers of Destruction. My thoughts on this really quickly is I know how much money this is gonna net WWE. I know that it's for the casual fans in Saudi Arabia, but for me, I'm just not buying it.
Because you're a purist.
It's not that I'm a purist. I would have just wanted Shawn Michaels to stay retired, just as he said it. Siguro if it was Shawn Michaels versus AJ Styles at WrestleMania, yun payag pa ako. But you know, late Shawn Michaels and Mayor of Knox County Kane. And The Undertaker in his 50s.
Okay. Zoom out ever so quickly. You remember what one of the talking points was after the Greatest Royal Rumble was, diba? Who they wanted booked. Do you remember the cast of characters that were already dead
wanted Ultimate on the card? Ultimate Warrior and Yokozuna.
Ultimate Warrior, Yokozuna, and the dead man himself.
Yeah.
Those three guys were the names that
the Saudi Arabian people wanted.
Yeah, that they wanted. Not the fans, mind you. This is the people who are paying for the show.
The royal family, basically.
Yes. So imagine this similar setup. Hey, we have these guys that we can conceivably call up and say, hey, let's put on a match.
It's kind of sad lang kasi it reinforces the Randy the Ram career arcs of a lot of these retired wrestlers.
And that's true.
I don't want to call Shawn Michaels a Randy the Ram.
I don't want to call Undertaker
and Kane and Triple H a Randy the Ram. But the more that we see these guys being low-key forced to get back in the ring at this stage in their lives and careers, it really does remind me of the wrestler.
But the wrestler didn't have oil money. That's the thing. You do have to understand, and this is just sound economics here, what would compel them to do this? One-of-a-kind payday.
Obviously, it's the money.
One-of-a-kind payday.
Obviously, it's the money. It pisses me off that they are truly after the money in Australia, the money in Saudi Arabia, which brings me to the controversial tweet from Dave Meltzer this past week where he said if we fans call the Super Showdown and WWE Crown Jewel glorified house shows, it's not necessarily the case when the Australia show is targeting 60,000, 70,000 audience members.
Which is bigger than most dome shows that you could do in the United States.
Yeah, and then the Saudi Arabia show apparently is projected to make more money than WrestleMania itself.
With Brock Lesnar's reported almost 1 million payday involved here.
Okay, so rumor, I get rumor, that, right? And as someone who wants the wrestling business to hit the mainstream even more and to really get more eyes on the product globally. You know, I do believe in the vision.
And getting the boys paid.
Yeah, and there's getting the wrestlers paid. I believe in the vision. But there are two problems here. The first problem is that these shows are being built up as super big deals that take up a lot of time in the build-up during your weekly Raw and SmackDown episodes.
Yeah.
But ultimately, what consequences do they have on long-term booking?
None. Absolutely none. That's why you can still conceivably call it a glorified house show on a impact end. But when you talk about the money, and at the end of the day, it's always about the money, you understand why they're investing this type of time on the booking.
But it's also very frustrating because you think about one of the key tenets of the wrestling business, which is always to build towards the future or to build younger stars. And the mere fact that these circumstances are kind of forcing WWE to keep relying on these older wrestlers.
Part-timers!
These part-timers who are in their 40s, who are in their 50s.
Who are
How do you build the next generation of stars? Like, yes, you can argue that you have The Shield. You can argue that you have
But The Shield is the present. Braun is the future. Brock Lesnar is the looming shadow?
Yeah. Nakaka-frustrate kasi it really takes away opportunities for the younger guys to be put in these situations where they can be the next Triple H, where they can be the next Shawn Michaels.
But they're on the card, diba? Most of them.
Yes, they're on the card, but that's not what the fans or the casuals are paying to see.
True.
Like, I don't think the Saudi Arabian royal family is gonna go apeshit over Cedric Alexander.
Mustafa Ali.
Mustafa Ali was not in the Saudi Arabian show.
Yeah, I know that. But
because of geopolitics.
Show. Yes.
So he's not going to be at the Crown Jewel show either. Here's the second problem, since I mentioned the Crown Jewel.
Yeah.
Look at your pay-per-view calendar and consider the spacing between Evolution and Crown Jewel. So you've got the all-women pay-per-view, which everyone is hyping up as a big deal. Steps forward.
Still is a big deal.
In the women's evolution movement. And then days later, you go back to Saudi Arabia in the backwards-ass country that doesn't even allow female performers. I get the argument na pera-pera lang naman yan eh. But the irony there is not lost on me.
It isn't. And it shouldn't be lost on our listeners and the viewing audience at large. But we're still gonna get it, diba? That's the thing. That's the argument that I will always make for Evolution. We're still gonna get it, right? Are you not... is this not what we wanted?
Even
in a vacuum, it makes sense. In a vacuum, it is fine. In a larger picture, it's just frustrating.
No. I think where my frustration comes from is the fact that it was as if WWE first told us, we're gonna have Evolution as the October show. And that's the all-women show, so it's special as fuck. And then they blindside you weeks later by saying, oh nga pala, in a few days, we're going to go back to Saudi Arabia. We're going to do Crown Jewel. So now Evolution becomes a Consuelo de Bobo. Bawal nga pala mag-wrestle yung girls sa Saudi Arabia. Pero, uy, may Evolution naman kayo, di ba?
And that is a very oversimplified version, but it is not wrong. It is not wrong.
Like, do you have a counter argument?
I don't. That's why.
That's how it comes across.
I'm just saying that it is reductionist, but it is not wrong.
So it's frustrating that this is happening. And I mean, obviously, two guys ranting about it on a podcast recorded at a den in Makati isn't really gonna change things. But I do hope it's something you think about
when you watch these shows.
Yeah, when you watch these shows, kind of like how you ought to be thinking about current events when you look at your social media, especially given that we're off the heels of the 46th anniversary of the Declaration of Martial Law. There, I finally found the time to squeeze
there. Good job, good segue.
All right, okay. So I know that this
and
is
another tete-a-tete.
Yes, we got ourselves a farcical tete-a-tete between a historical revisionist. Actually, between two historical revisionists. It's very
and
problematic.
And one man who is pushing 90.
Yeah. No, he's over 90 at this point.
Oh, God.
He is 94.
Please expire.
He's 94.
Please expire, sir.
This is really problematic because, if you know your history, you know that there are a lot of attempts to whitewash this history.
And still ongoing.
Still ongoing, right? There are still people who legitimately believe that martial law was not wrong, that martial law did not result in massacres, in tortures, in oppression, in suppression of rights and freedom and civil liberties.
In massive debt that we are still paying to this day.
Actually, it's exacerbated to the point that there are some economists who will tell you that our the peso-dollar valuation is so low to the point that it could sink to Cambodian levels of no return.
Let's pray not.
Yeah, I guess the only reason why we're bringing it up for the last minute or so is to tell you to be educated.
Be aware of what is going around about you.
Yeah, wag magpaloko sa fake news. Wag magpaloko sa mga taong may sariling agenda. Because I think all of us have to have that one agenda, which is, oh my God, we have to get the country out of this shithole.
Yep.
Right? So, I think that's all we can say about that at the moment, at the risk of forcing you to turn off this episode of the podcast.
If you never wanted to hear it anyway, so...
Yeah, yeah. It's just that, you know, hashtag never forget, hashtag never again. Parang awa nyo na. Please, don't let it happen again. These civil liberties that you're probably taking for granted are the first things you're gonna miss when shit hits the fan.
We might not be able to do this podcast in the future.
Well, yes.
There's that.
Or you might not even be able to... access it. Watch PWR.
It's true.
Right?
Because it is subversive to a degree, and we're not just talking about Sandata.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
We're not just talking about him. It's just the whole show as a whole is a little bit more subversive than you would give it credit for. But that's intertextuality at this point. Let's not go there.
Tangina, kung yung Voltes 5 nga, nabano martial law, what more PWR?
Diba? Okay.
Right, let's move on. Okay,
back to wrestling.
Back to more news outside the ring. Rey Mysterio is...
officially signed.
Back with the WWE. It's going to be a 2-year contract, but the deal on Rey's end is that if after 18 months he wants to bail, he can. Right?
Which, okay. I think, at what's he now? He's pushing 50.
No, naman. He's in his early 40s.
Early mid?
How old is
Dominic now?
Dominic is probably 18 at this point.
Dominic is old enough to be on excursion. Yan yung alam ko.
Alright, Rey Mysterio.
Anyway, Rey Mysterio's deal, 2 years.
Yeah, two years. So, I'm not sure where he'll end up. Rey is 44 at this point.
44, okay.
Yeah, he's gonna be
Mid-50s.
44 by December.
Okay.
If you check out the Grapevine article on smarkhenry.ph, Roe does mention he would like to see Rey on SmackDown. I don't want to see Rey on 205
I do,
Live.
I do want to see him guest on 205, just for one episode.
Sige, yeah,
imagine that.
I don't want
that.
Rey to be on 205 to turn it into ECW, like WWE ECW.
So he would be in the role of Kurt Angle?
No.
For ECW. What Kurt Angle did for ECW.
I don't
reboot.
Want that for Rey. But I want Rey to be on SmackDown to kind of be like a different version of The Undertaker. Like, he doesn't have to be there every week.
Okay, I see the logic.
He's there, he's a big fucking deal.
He is.
Like, get him new stories to build towards the big shows like Survivor Series and then the Royal Rumble.
Rumbles,
but he doesn't have to be there every week. Because every talent is there every week.
Yeah, he can be a part-timer with consequence.
Yes.
But
that's what I want for Rey Mysterio.
But the 205 Live argument kasi is na Rey is cruiserweight wrestling.
Yes.
And that is something that you give him a one-off story arc on 205 and then shift him to SmackDown.
I don't mind that either because it lends credibility to the other guys. But the one reason why I don't want Rey on 205 is I don't want to perpetuate the stereotype.
Oh, yes.
If you are under this weight class,
this is where you get help. Pwede.
Sure, I like what they're doing with Leo Rush, that they're putting him on Raw.
And he is excellent on Raw.
I love him on Raw right now. He gets to scuffle with
Kevin Owens,
diba?
Dude.
So that's a good thing. I like that Drake Maverick is getting exposure on Monday Night Raw, but it's the stereotype is still there.
Yeah.
Inasmuch as they wanted to avoid what WCW did with the cruiserweights in the 90s, that's exactly what we have.
With more talking,
sure.
There is that. Now, the cruiserweights just get, and WCW cruiserweights just get fed to the NWO all the time.
Yeah.
There was zero credibility and zero showcase of their actual talents outside of like an 8-minute match between Dean Malenko and whoever else they could pull.
Probably Chris Jericho.
Probably.
Okay, so other news. Outside. You've got a couple of injuries to the women, Alexa Bliss and Sasha Banks. They went down this week. Alexa, I believe, during Hell in a Cell.
She pulled out of the Mixed Match Challenge.
Yeah, so she's replaced by my favorite women's wrestler, Ember Moon. Actually, I don't really hate Ember Moon the person. I have nothing against her.
I just hate everything against the character.
Yeah, because it is non-existent at this point. It doesn't make sense to me. And then your second injury, Sasha Banks. Who may or may not be pulled out of the Mixed Match Challenge as well.
So, well, her tapings would be a little further down the line, so there's time.
I just hope that Alexa and Sasha come back in time for Evolution, because how awful would it be if the show went on without
those two?
Those two, and especially they have been linchpins of this division.
Especially with Alexa's marquee moment, diba?
Yes.
There's that.
The Trish-Alexa match, which people have been looking forward to varying degrees. Now, to close out the news outside the ring, this week it was reported that officials from WWE and Impact met at WWE headquarters in Stamford, Connecticut, to discuss matters.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what these matters are, but if we had to put an intelligent guess, a hypothesis to this, it's probably about the library.
Yeah, I would have a feeling that if anything was discussed, it was the library. No talent exchange discussions should have happened.
Well, we don't know that. Alam natin is that it's most probably the library, because we have seen Impact footage on WWE GFW Network programming.
GFW-owned right? footage. Diba?
So, I would personally love to see old AJ matches, old Joe matches on the network. Like, if they could find a way...
Old TJ matches.
Yeah, old TJP matches.
Mark, you forget.
Old Bobby Roode matches.
Rockstar Spud.
EC3. Diba? All of these guys with their backstories rooted in Impact. Even old Christian matches. Remember when
he was good on Impact. If you want,
he was a main eventer there.
He has service. No, because that gave credence to what happened. So if you ever do a Christian docu without that,
kulang.
I can see. May kulang.
I mean, yung t-shirt niya when he came back really referenced his time in TNA. Exactly. No, it referenced his time in TNA because it had the date when he won the NWA World Heavyweight Championship, which was 219, February 19. Mm-hmm. I forget the year. But, you know, I really want to see all of these old matches. Like, imagine getting to watch that 5-star match between AJ, Samoa Joe, and Christopher Daniels on the WWE Network.
That would be surreal, seeing Christopher Daniels on the network, but okay. Yeah, that would be nuts. That's one of those matches that, if you haven't seen it, go watch it.
Yeah, do yourself a favor.
I will tell
you, it's uploaded in full on YouTube. So you can actually find somewhere. It if you have a PS4.
Or officially?
No, it's officially uploaded.
Okay. TNA put it there.
I believe either GFW or TNA put it there. So if you can hook it up to your PS4 on your large HD TV,
it's well worth it.
25 minutes that I really, really enjoy. Right? So that pretty much puts a bow on the news outside the ring. Let's step into the ring and let's talk about Hell in a Cell. Okay. Hell in a Cell, to me, was a solid show. If you take that blue ballsy ending out of it.
Yes. But that ending leaves such a bitter taste in your mouth. Na parang kumain ka, nagsubo ka ng ampalaya na buo.
Tangina, feeling ko kumain ako ng Thai. Paano pinakain ako ng Thai?
It was like,
yung feeling ko.
Because I actually did watch all of it and I was just like, how did you fucking get to that main event and who signed off on this? Who fucking signed off on this after that show? It was so satisfying.
When Brock's music played, I was like, oh shit. And then, alam yung, after the initial shock factor wore off, I was like, oh shit.
Diba? It's like, wait, he's back. Diba? It sets back in.
Here's my biggest problem with the Brock interference.
Mm.
It took a big dumpski on everything.
On everything that they built after he left.
And everything that happened in the match.
Exactly.
So,
And that's not saying much about the match also.
Yeah, kasi yung match magulo siya but not in a magulo fun way.
Yeah, it was just, what is going on?
Okay, so let's break down the things that were pretty much rendered inconsequential.
Yes.
One, naging walang kwenta yung interference in a Drew and Dolph and Seth and Dean.
Which was valid to a degree because they were involved in the storyline.
Yeah, so nag-away sila outside, Dolph and Seth crashed through the tables, Dean and Drew teased it, pero wala nangyari. So, parang okay, so Brock comes in and lays waste to Braun and Roman, tapos, what about these other four guys who also killed themselves outside? Are we supposed to like not mind them now? That's one. Two, Braun and Roman's actual match. Kasi, when their respective partners came out,
yes,
and brawled outside the cell,
yes,
Braun and Roman were basically in nap time mode.
Yes, they were watching.
So, in essence, naging walang kwenta din yung laban nila. Nakapagpahinga sila. And then when Brock came in, naging walang kwenta yung rest period, the match
itself.
They
barely fought back.
They weren't able to fight back kasi supposedly, Roman and Braun had beaten the shit out of one another. Supposedly,
that's the thing. Supposedly.
Which leads me to number three. Brock's interference really took a crap on their credibilities. Both Braun and Roman.
Everyone's.
Braun and Roman especially. Because Roman is being built as this Super Cena archetype, yes, babyface, diba? And then you have Braun, who's supposed to be the monster among men. So let's let those constructs sit first, okay, while I bring up Mick Foley, who they brought back as a special referee.
Who didn't do all of that, you know, all that much.
Yeah, pero I'm not talking about what he did in this match. I'm talking about what he did 20 years ago.
Oh, true.
They brought it back to glorify the fact that Mick Foley is a certified badass for not only falling off the cell, he fell through the roof, yeah, and then he had teeth lodged up in his nose, and he finished the match.
Yes.
So you have a badass like Mick Foley who finished the match despite all of those circumstances, and yet Braun and Roman couldn't even finish the match despite an interference from Brock Lesnar.
With the title on the line.
With the title on the
line. You have to, that's the big asterisk here din eh.
So nakakapikon siya. Nainis ako because you know what you built up with Mick Foley and his character.
And what he did on the Raw prior.
Right. And then with Roman and Braun,
you
ganun lang na destroy na sila ni Brock Lesnar, just a shot with a piece of the cell, a piece of the table, and an F5. Yun lang?
Because both guys have done a lot. I've gone through a lot more at the hands of Brock.
Yes.
Before Brock has to put them out. And considering, you know, wrestling logic, pull wrestling logic into all of this, does it make sense? Not really. But at the end of the day, the yan lang argument makes sense.
Nainis ako. And sayang kasi, I enjoyed the pay-per-view.
Up to that point.
Jeff Hardy versus Randy Orton almost made me hurl my breakfast. Muti kong masuka nun.
No one's getting an ear piercing.
Anytime soon. After that, yeah.
Diba,
nakakainis lang, sayang. Parang, why do we have to keep relying on Brock? Obviously, we know why. Because Crown Jewel is the end game. But it really just pisses me off. So let's talk about something happy instead.
And what is happy to talk about?
Becky Lynch being SmackDown Women's Champion.
Yes.
I'm ecstatic about it. I love that she finally won. There's this argument that broke out on Twitter between Road Dogg and WWE fans because Road Dogg has been taking the heat from fans about how Charlotte and Becky are being booked, are being written as characters. To which,
and SmackDown as a whole.
To which Road Dogg mentions that it's not about who's babyface and who's heel anymore because all he wants is for us to pick a side. So, for someone like us,
Educated smarky marks.
Well, it's not even about that. It's just the fact that you and I would rather root for Becky than Charlotte despite Becky's actions.
Yes.
Because Becky's actions in a vacuum could be
Are justified.
No. In a vacuum, they could be considered dickish.
Mm.
But for us, given the backstory of Becky Lynch, she's still endearing. She's still sympathetic.
She's still justifying.
Yes. So I'm not sure if I fully buy Road Dogg's argument. Now I just want you to pick a side.
But
there's a reason why they're being written in these shades of gray.
But at the end of the day, Becky won.
Yes.
which is the satisfaction that we're getting. Because everyone else who was on Charlotte's side got their 5 minutes.
Yeah.
They've had their 5 minutes. She's come back. She's put on great matches. And the match itself was pretty good. Not their best, but pretty damn good.
No, I like the story that they tried to tell.
Which was, I'm just getting there. Apparently they've gotten a lot more done on NXT and in other spaces. But this was worthy of that compilation video that they're going to put. That collection of the Four Horsewomen when it comes to it.
This is a good
addition to that collection. But at the end of the day, they've had better matches, but this one felt good for Becky.
The thing about this story is it's far from over, obviously.
Oh, obviously.
Right? It's far from over. But I just wish na WWE would stop being tone deaf. Because I understand yung argument ni Road Dogg na in this day and age, it's also kind of like what Cody said on Twitter this week when he said that there aren't really any baby faces and heels anymore because
just
it's
characters.
About characters and context.
Well, that was this week.
Yes, but it's such a simplistic. It's too nuanced for how WWE tends to treat its audience members, which is simplistic.
Yes.
Ergo, Charlotte is the sympathetic character because all she wants is to get her best friend back. And Becky is the bad guy because she was the one who threw away her friendship in pursuit of the title. Yun yung pinaka black and white view of the story.
And then,
if you're not a nuanced viewer, it's so easy for you to read into that text and just analyze it that way or take it in that way yourself.
Which you don't need to do.
I think that Road Dogg is trying to justify something by saying that it's more layered and more nuanced
than you think.
Uh-huh. Pero the way that they're presenting it betrays that.
Well, malay natin na there's a long-term plan here.
I hope so, but as it stands, as we're recording this on September 22, 2018, it just doesn't appear that way.
Yeah.
So that's why those are my feelings about this.
But at the end of the day, are we going to keep watching this? Yes. Are we still invested? Yes.
Those are the questions.
Have we given up on this feud? No.
No, I still think it's the more it's the most compelling feud on SmackDown. AJ and with apologies to AJ Styles and Samoa Joe. I mean,
their match at Hell in a Cell wasn't
as good as I would have wanted it to be. Yeah,
I don't know. I have to say this. I have to throw this out. AJ Styles is letting me down.
Wow.
Ever so slightly.
Wow.
No, because at this point, you would think that he would be commanding the show the way that everyone says Roman does. And this is not hot take kung hot take. This has been building for a while. AJ's still good, but I expected so much more at this point.
Alright.
In the year. Considering, okay, remember where he was January. This year.
Yeah, yeah.
Leading into WrestleMania and how on fire he was into that Nakamura feud where we thought, this is it, this is his crowning moment in WWE. Where's the crowning moment? I wanted it. He's held the belt, yes. He's represented SmackDown well, yes. But after this match, I'm just like, dude, you are capable of so much more. Do you not feel this way? Or are you just so surprised that I have these feelings?
No, I don't really feel this way. I am. I've actually enjoyed AJ's work.
Yes,
I just haven't liked his stories. I didn't like the Nakamura story.
Oh.
I didn't like the Joe story until Hell in a Cell. Ngayon, I'm kind of warming up to it. I just hope that Joe is the one to dethrone AJ because
he needs to chase again.
Medyo nasasawa na ako with AJ Styles as babyface WWE champion.
Oh, diba? He's lost that. Okay, he's regaining his edge a bit in this feud. Valid, but I still feel like it should have been glory. But alam niyo yung super glorious AJ Styles really owning everything on SmackDown and WWE and putting shame to everything that they're doing on Raw. But wala pa.
I think it goes back to the stories and how haphazardly they come across. Like, you know, the Nakamura story is the biggest red mark on all of this.
Ah!
Okay, switching to another hot take.
But yes.
My hot take is that I wish it was Jeff Hardy who retired this past weekend and not Matt Hardy.
Do we know if WWE hasn't confirmed yet?
No, they haven't. But Matt Hardy's social media features him saying goodbye. Now he broke character, broke kayfabe. Yeah. He said that Corpus Christi was his last fulfillment or last booking he had to fulfill. And I'm pretty sad about it because Matt Hardy has always been the better character, the better technician, true, the better mic man, you know.
The better all-around performer. Wrestler.
Yeah.
That is true.
And we saw this highlighted during the Jeff Hardy-Randy Orton match. So talagang Jeff Hardy is who I think Kota Ibushi will be in like 10-15 years.
No, Kota Ibushi can tell stories.
Pero Ibushi's recklessness, I see it in Jeff Hardy or vice versa.
You go back watch Kota Ibushi last six months. No, but yes.
Let me tell you this. Go. Jeff Hardy can tell stories. The Jeff Hardy CM Punk story
was gold, and that is always going to be there.
The Jeff Hardy chase for the WWE Championship against Triple H and Edge was also a good story.
Fun, yes.
He can tell a story. What I don't like is how the stories he tells, or the way he tells stories, which involves a lot of him crashing and burning. And that was a big requirement, I guess, in the Hell in a Cell match.
Because it's possibly going to be his one and only Hell in a Cell attempt. Which I wholeheartedly say, Jeff, do whatever the fuck you want.
Bakit? Pag sinabi
have
ba
your
ni,
moment.
Pag sinabi ba ni Bongbong Marcos na, oh, this is the only chance I get to be president
of
the Philippines.
Two different things. Two different things here, Stan. This is give him his one wish within reason. Hell in a Cell is within reason because they're only gonna get to do it. They only do it once a year,
and that's a
stupid thing. By the way, we've talked about it at length in the past on this podcast. But you give Jeff Hardy this one chance to do the few things that he knows he can do without risking his life. It's fine. I will.
I'd like to see
that.
He risked his life by hanging from the ceiling of the cell and then face planting on the fucking table.
Compared to him doing the shit that he did in those TLC ladder matches, this was safer. This is much safer.
I don't know. That was really an uncomfortable match to watch, and
it
I think
was.
That was the point.
And that was the point. And it was
because Randy Orton's trying to set himself up as this character that makes you feel uncomfortable to watch.
Bringing back Legend Killer Shades.
Right. Yeah, and that's not even mentioning the screwdriver into his ear.
Why did you? No, the visual is still fresh.
Yeah, our good friend Nicole is so. She was telling me now, oh, that doesn't really hurt in real life, and I'm like, I don't care. The image is
no,
the
because
image
it's,
is, it made me want to hurl. It's
the
so bad.
Sticking a screwdriver in is bad, and the last time we saw a screwdriver in a Hell in a Cell match was Ric Flair. Triple H. You remember what he did to Ric Flair?
Oh, yeah. Oh, shit. Yeah, now that
so
you mentioned
that's,
it.
So that's what fucked with me. Because when he saw... You see him twisted in the ear. It's like, okay, what's next? What's next? When's he gonna take it to his skull and fucking bash him in? Buti lang hindi niya ginawa. But at the end of the day, if this is Jeff Hardy's moment in Hell in a Cell that goes on the compilation, back to compilations again, on the network, I'm okay with it.
I'm really not okay with it. I didn't like that. Didn't like the match. Very uncomfortable. But
it did its job.
I guess it goes back to my bias. Now I don't like death matches in general. I don't like these matches where I end up cringing and wincing. No, don't like it. One last bit before we get to the Tengu interview, and it's a concern that Nicole So also brought up to me this week privately.
Friend
she was
of
like,
the podcast.
Yeah, she was like, for all the talk of the women's evolution and women's wrestling coming, you know, going forward. Why were there no women in the cell? So much for women's evolution. And I told her, none of the feuds deserve the cell yet. I get
nothing
what you
has
mean.
Been escalated that far.
Yeah. The Charlotte-Becky feud, had it started earlier, had Charlotte not had to have surgery for her breast implants.
And the long layoff.
You know,
was that. There was that.
Probably Charlotte-Becky could have deserved the cell. But the thing about it is, my take is, I want the women to deserve the cell again. Like,
yes,
Charlotte,
yes.
Sasha deserved
it. Deserved it. Deserved it.
I don't want women's cell matches to be diluted the way the men's are.
The way that we just sort of got Randy...
And Jeff Hardy out of nowhere.
Valid.
Right?
Valid.
So, yun lang. I get it. I understand the concern that, oh, so much for women's evolution when the women aren't even getting the cell treatment.
But they're on the pay-per-view. This is what I will go back to. Between the amount of content that is women-centric right now versus what we were getting 3 years ago... When it was just the four horsewomen, Paige and Emma, basically, diba? That was it on NXT.
No, I think that's a poor argument. I don't think that's no. I don't think that's the right argument to say. On the bright side,
it's not so much of.
It's not that because we're way past that because we're already getting women's matches that are pretty good. We're already getting Kyrie versus Shayna Baszler, that type of matches.
We're already getting them being taken seriously with commentary,
yes.
Taking them seriously,
yes.
With
we're already getting Renee Young on the commentary table. So for
yes.
You to tell me na, oh, but you know, at least they're on the card. That's such a backwards ass argument. That's such a 2015 argument. What I'm trying to say is I understand where that concern is coming from. It's just that you should look at the bigger picture. The end game should be that when the women's cell matches are happening, they're not diluted. They're
and they
not
deserve
taken for
to be
granted.
In the cell.
The feud deserves to be in the cell. It should be a blood feud ending match.
Which we haven't seen since...
Charlotte Sasha.
Yeah, because even
which
if...
Which was the last cell
which
match.
Which was the last cell match. And even if you'd say they continued... if they did Sasha Bailey Wright out of WrestleMania, or in that, you know, that vein, if they made it to this point... Baka sila pwede pa.
Yeah, that could have deserved it. Thank
but
you.
Nothing else.
Yeah, nothing at the moment. So there, that's my take on the women not being in the cell. So that
right.
Wraps up our talk on everything that happened inside and outside of the ring. Let's talk to our guest, Tengu, who is literally here
Tengu!
Right now.
What's up, guys? This is Mr. Athletic Jeff Cobb. And you're listening to the SGP Podcast.
It's been about a year since we last had this guest on the podcast, and we're really stoked that he's making his return. As you can probably hear, he's stirring his tea in a classy way, which is not exactly how you'd imagine this masked wrestler to be. All right, so let's welcome him back to the podcast. We've got Tengu returning to the SGP Podcast.
Our
hello,
friend.
Hello, what's up?
Hey, so how's it going? How has your latest trip to the Philippines been?
Ah, amazing. Love it. I've been... Eating,
He's a heavyweight now.
Yes. I don't know if that's going to affect my my performance this Sunday.
Clearly you're darker than I remember you. Like, when you stepped out of the car, I was like, damn, what the fuck have you been doing?
Yeah, I've got that Moreno tone, isn't it?
Not like you needed it in the first place. Oh, man.
Not like they can see your face.
I know, yes. Yeah, I mean, we went to Baguio again.
Yeah.
This time we had a stop off at La Union.
Which did is some nice. Surfing?
Yeah, we did. No, we didn't actually. We actually didn't do any surfing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. We are like money wise, we were budgeting. We were like, okay, we have to. Where can we spend? And like, yeah. Where else did we go? We were Bohol the last 5 days. Yeah,
we got to see the Tarshears and the Chocolate Hills, all that good stuff.
Beautiful, beautiful place. We went to the Virgin Islands and Balakasad.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, we did some snorkeling there.
It's nice.
Got to spot some turtles.
Turtles, actually, sea turtles!
And we had there were a lot of dolphins during the dolphin spotting. It was just like...
So did you guys get to go dolphin watching or...
You were off the boat? Like?
No, we were on the boat, but we were just like...
View.
Yeah,
it's dolphin watching.
There's just loads of them just coming out.
I think if it has anything to do with the swarm and them coming closer in.
Yeah.
Because usually, on the Bohol side, they're a lot farther out.
Yeah.
Than usual, so I'm like, oh.
Yeah, I think we were lucky because it was just like coming left and right.
Yeah, you guys are kind of lucky because the weather's been pretty erratic over the last week or so. Yeah. So the fact that you guys were able to go from point A to B to C to D and do all of that stuff, I'd say Lady Luck was smiling on you guys.
Yeah. Well, we left Baguio at the right time.
Uh-huh.
So right when we left is
when the storm hit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I remember like watching the wifey's Instagram, and it's like, oh wait, you're leaving. Okay, because for those of you who are listening, there was a major landslide in Baguio that lined up not naman hours, but like within a day of you guys coming down.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it really hit the northern region pretty bad, so it was all over the news. So, you know, we're just glad you guys are safe. We're glad you're here, back in the city, in time for the show tomorrow.
Glad you're on the show.
Yeah, we're glad you're on the show in the first place.
So am I.
You know, this guy's on the poster. He's the poster boy of Homefront.
That was mad. When initially, when it was posted up, I was like, whoa. I was like, holy
it's
shit.
Not the first time you're on a poster.
I know,
either.
But still, this is it's a big honor because like I'm a massive, you know, I've been following PWR for a long time.
And you have been following MWF from afar.
Yes, I have. Like, I try and keep like intact like my eyes and my brain on like the Filipino scene, like as close as as much possible.
So since you were last here, what do you think has changed? Or what do you think, or what have you observed? Because you did attend a PWR training session since you last arrived.
He conducted one.
Yeah, right?
I mean, basically ran the thing.
Right, so what's changed since then?
Well, it's good to see, you know, what's his name? Quattro.
Okay.
You know, his character's come up. And like, I've been like...
I know you love him.
I know, I've been following him. And like, he's one of the guys that has stepped his game up. And... who else? There's like a, I mean, like, it's good seeing. I mean, Main Max. I actually never got to see him wrestle before. So now,
because he was injured. He was injured when he came. Yeah,
and then like seeing the whole like when I mean the only way I can really watch you guys is through Instagram online Instagram posts.
Yeah,
and every now and then I'll be like, oh, Camus, do you have a link or anything? Like, I have
my debut. Yeah, that's about it.
Send me, I want to see your debut. Like, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's just, you guys are just keep pushing and pushing. And yeah, it's just, it's always good to see like the Filipino scene rising with MWF, like how they have changed, how they've kind of come up with their own sort of identity, different from yours. So it's kind of like the branding, you know, the way they present their brand is, you know, back to how they did before. Like, I really like what they're doing with it. Like,
and you're a marketing professional, so this is something you really understand on so many levels.
Yeah, I mean, it works because, like, you know, before when there was just you two, like,
it still is just us.
Exactly. when it was YouTube.
So philosophical, this guy.
It is still. Yeah, I was always like, oh, you know, PWR, like,
yeah.
But NWF was always kind of, for me, like, it wasn't as good. But the fact that they've kind of created, you know, that they've, I would assume, like, they've thought of ways to make them different to you guys.
Mm-hmm.
So their whole presentation, their branding, and how they've come across. And now it's like, it's making them, like, also, in terms of, well, for me anyway, it really catches me. Like, I'm like, okay, they're doing something different to you guys. But yeah, it's good. And the fact that you guys are also collaborating, sharing talent, because I think, like, the way the scene will go further is if you guys support each other.
Yeah. I think the relaunch really plays into that. It's a big
yeah.
part of that improvement you've seen. The leadership change,
yeah.
I think, also really heavily influential in the growth that you've seen.
Actually, I did want to ask, how many of the shorts have you seen of MWF? The full-blown productions YouTube?
Well, I've seen whatever ones that they've put online. Like, I really like the opening one where it had Chili Willy in it. And he was the coach. And he was just like, he was just standing there with his hips, like like acting like the football coach.
Looking at
all these...
You guys.
All the NWF roster kind of have a battle in the field. But I really like, what's his name? Gig Striker?
Yeah. And Sagot Ketab Vinyas.
Yes. Yes, I really like his gimmick. Like, again, like, because my dad watches all these, like, Filipino action movies.
Yeah. The old ones.
And, like, I really liked how they presented his character. Like, his movements and, like,
it appeals to you.
Yeah, it's just like, wow, this guy's cool. Man. He's like that sort of. Is it like? Would you say it's 80s, 70s?
80s to early 90s.
Yeah, 80s to early 90s.
And that's pretty much how he is in real life. Like, I've met the guy.
Yeah.
I've hung out with the guy. You know,
he's been on the podcast.
Yeah,
you know, he would show up in that denim jacket,
yeah.
and he does talk the way that he talks in these vignettes.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh man, I'd like to see him wrestle one time. Like, I think his presentation, everything's like, it's like I'm a fan of.
All right, now
yeah.
okay. Let's talk about PWR Homefront. Obviously,
yeah.
you're going to be a huge part of the show. But I know that this trip for this year is something that you'd already been talking about last time when we were last hanging out. Like you said, you planned to come back. So when were the seeds planted for your return match in PWR?
Well, I always knew that, like as you know, I've been following you guys for a while. And like JDL has been one of the guys I've, like, you know, this guy has so much.
He's your friend.
He's
frenemies.
What are you talking about? I hate him.
I'm not trying to fuck up the match.
Yeah,
trust
no.
me.
Anyways, yeah, I've just been like a fan of his work, and like every time I see online, like how you guys are all doing, and like I just knew I wanted to like work him in a match. And I've always like I've always like, oh, you know, it'd be cool, like. Like, I'm looking forward to the time where we actually have a match, and then like when
now it's happening,
and then because I knew last year we were like, okay, I'm definitely coming back next year, so I just had to. I didn't really say, oh, can we have a match? It was more like, I'm coming this time, and yeah, I can wrestle on this show, yeah. And he was like, okay, cool, yeah, we'll sort out our match. I was like, oh really? I was like, yes. Oh, okay, good.
Damn it, JD.
Yeah, so...
so easy.
I mean, like, we've always spoke about, like one day wrestling each other, and now it's happening. And I think, for me, personally, like, this will be one of my biggest matches for this year.
No, you could tell the big fight feel from the vignette alone. That promo that you guys
shot. That Serizal fucking...
That was really, really good. I mean, the crowd at the Power Max Center Spotlight really popped the hell out for that. I'm not sure if you were able to catch the reaction.
Oh, I sent it to him.
For it.
I sent it to him, like,
great.
Right after.
It was exactly like, what, like, in terms of when filming it, and, like it's exactly... like it's all, yeah, I was like, okay, I'm like, I'll leave it. At, like, when it comes to that bit, I wonder, like,
hold on. Okay, let's break that down for a sec. But before we break that down, I just want to say that there's something about the way you guys became memorable. You and Neil, Dr. Hertz.
Oh, he says hi, by the way.
Oh, that's great. Hi. What's up, Neil?
Like, he wanted to say hi to everyone. and everyone on this podcast. Like,
no, I mean, it does show that you guys really made an impact on the Revo Nation. The fact that they remembered you after that one performance, and that you your mask was immediately a cue for them to just scream and remember, oh, this guy is a threat. This guy is a big deal.
And then it's there's like that holy shit, it's Tengu moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the thing.
So
there.
that really says a lot about how you guys made an impact here. So let's break down that promo, because a lot of people left the Power Max Center spot like that night feeling a bit confused. I mean, yeah, there was the excitement for Tengu versus JDL, but what did that promo mean, or what were the things in the video that you were trying to get at?
Well, yeah, I mean, like, the whole thing with Tengu is like, my I'm a film student, so my main inspiration, like, I'm a massive Takeshi Kitano film buff. But I'm also really into South Korean movies. Like, when you think like Old Boy, and then you have like, you know, the really old, like really cut the classics by Ozu. Who else? Like Akira Kurosawa.
You can see the Kurosawa in that ending.
So like, you know, Tengu is pretty much like a massive love letter to all, like a massive homage. That's the word. To like growing up, like the sort of films that I watched. So, like, I knew, like, when I wanted to present, like, promos, like, I wanted to do this. I wanted to do it in a way where it's like, okay.
It's cinematic.
Yeah, I wanted to make it like, you know, the films I watch. I've never... That idea has been, like, in my head for a very long time. And it's just in the past, I've never had time to do it. But now, I've quit my job, and now, like, I have more time to... I can actually, have time to film and be creative and stuff. So I was like, you know what? I need to film this before I go. So literally, I filmed it on the Friday before Project W, before my project, when I was wrestling for Project W. So during the afternoon, I was like, right, I'm going to go out and film this, and then I'm going to go to Project W.
Which was, where was the Project W show?
Resistance Gallery.
Okay, Resistance Gallery. Yes.
Where'd you find the field?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That was the
field?
Yeah, the location, the open field.
Where in London is that?
Well, you'll find that in, well, not in London, but like...
Bethnal Green?
No, not in Bethnal Green. But you can find some really nice parks. Richmond Park, Holland Park. We're all about the parks.
That was at a park, not a field?
It was a field.
Bare, it's a field.
It took us along, like, we walked across the bank for a while. I don't know where it was going. One of the guys that, the guy who helped film.
The guy who got assassinated, basically.
Yeah, no, it's actually the guy who acted as the cameraman.
Okay.
Yeah, Phil Fiction, who does amazing promo work. So, you know.
Phil Fiction with which promotion?
London Lucha League and Lucha Britannia. He does
just to give him some
work. No.
He needs airtime too.
No, he's fantastic. Like, he's been, like, in terms of Triple L and stuff, like, and Lucha Britannia getting all the content out, he's been amazing. He showed me this place, and I was like, yes, this is perfect. We were walking around, it's just like fields everywhere, and I was like, right, this is really good. Well, I can get a really good wide shot, good landscape.
Run it out.
And I was just like, right.
How long did it take to do the actual shoot, considering there were like two or three of you involved?
Yeah,
only two or three.
It took about less than an hour. It feels like less than an hour.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, if you have the concept in your head and you know this is the frame, this is the shot, you go wide, you go close, you go this way.
Yeah. I had like a storyboard drawn out. And then,
look at the attention to detail on this guy. And
put my film
film degree at
film
work.
Degree. Yeah, in practice.
No, but okay. So it took about an hour to shoot it. Was the editing process difficult though, or like I want to know which part was the most difficult, because like it seemed something so easy for you.
Well, Friday I filmed, Saturday I edited, and then I had it sent to JD Mark.
JDL
on Sunday. So it was pretty much like, right, I got to get this out quick. So. Because you guys are having a show,
right?
The
Renaissance,
Renaissance on the Sunday. So I was like, right, I got to give you guys enough time to actually, to send it.
And you know, it's like when they did the test, like because before little known fact about PWR,
yeah, we actually troubleshoot shit.
Yeah, we
that's
did
good.
We
that's
like every
good.
Like right after everyone was done doing their stretches, they're like, okay, test the new videos, Neutron. okay, Neutron is excellent, and then the promo comes out, and then we're just like, some of us didn't know.
Yeah.
And then I knew because you know, you kept talking to me about it, and I was like,
yeah,
okay. And then I saw the shirt, and I'm like, they've got no idea. So good though.
Thanks. Yeah. Well, I guess the whole plan, like when I was planning, I was like, right, I wanted it to go on to leave the suspense till the very moment where I show my face. And I was just like, right. Yeah, no, I'm glad that the reaction was how it was. When it happened, I was like, oh, thank God. I was afraid that it was just going to be like, oh, what the hell's going on?
No, for what it's worth, I'd like to think that the reaction for that video was pretty much on the same level as when Tria and Evan Carlo won the tag team championships. It's pretty loud, pretty raucous. So, you know, roughly on the same level. So it was pretty good.
With more gasps.
Or when JDL came out as heel as the fifth member.
Oh.
No.
Because I thought that was pretty crazy.
That was
crazy.
Okay. That pop was more shock.
Than
anything.
I just literally, like, I was on the side and I was watching and I was like, people were getting off their seats looking at each other. And I was like, what? I was like, whoa. I was like, holy shit. Wow.
It's fine. You're not because we have the
No, it was like that was a really cool moment to be in.
I was in the ring when that was happening and I was like, oh shit, like we're the baby faces here, but that reaction was so overwhelming that we were like, all right, we have to get them back on our side.
Yeah.
Because like JDL just became NWO level of cool heel.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's a challenge.
He's one of those guys that, you know, he can try to be heel, but it's just like,
it, deep down inside,
it's so hard. Who would you compare that to now? Like
Becky Lynch.
Yeah, Becky Lynch. Yeah, she could try hard to be heel, but like she's just you can't.
Sami Zayn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sami, I go, close comparison.
Yeah.
I go back to the Sami Zayn argument.
He's
a career face no matter what he does.
Yeah.
Yeah, like JDL can kick a puppy in the ring, and I think people would.
Okay, wait. That's a puppy. That's a puppy, man. I've seen. Okay. As a guy who drinks with JDL often, I don't think he would do that. He doesn't have it in him to kick a puppy. But if he did, even if he was like the drunkest I've ever seen him, he would never kick a puppy.
Well, that's good.
I would like to think no one would kick a puppy unless they.
Oh,
have
you'd
some,
be surprised.
Unless they have some really dark.
Messed up shit in the brain.
Well, even if you're like an edgelord that's trying to do things in a non-existent promotion, maybe they kick puppies. I don't know.
Anyway, let's move on. Let's move on before you talk more shit. What have you been up to though in terms of your wrestling career? Like since we last had you on Post Vendetta, and now that you're back, you know what other projects or what other bookings have you had since?
Yeah, I've been continuing wrestling as much as I can in the UK. Yeah, balancing real life with my wrestling life.
Yeah,
the other ego.
No, it's been good. I've been wrestling for new promotions, Project W, which I did recently, and Pro Wrestling Clash, which are like have become one of my favorite places to wrestle for.
What makes them special?
Oh, it's you know
Project
what?
Project W.
Yeah. Oh, Project W.
Project
also,
W
yeah.
is freaking cool.
That place just has its own sort of like vibe, and it's just buzzing. And also, like I think the people that they book are fairly.
God, it's like they book. They got Osprey to do a drinking thing, right?
Yes.
I remember seeing that. And I'm just like, what are they trying to promote? But I see the rest of the card. It's like, ooh.
And actually, the last show they had Bea Priestley. And Chris Wolf made a...
Hey.
Yes.
Hello, Chris Wolf.
We still want you on this podcast, by the way.
She's lovely. She's really lovely. Yeah, she had a little...
You had dinner with Chris.
Oh, yeah. We literally sat and had a dirty ice cream.
Wow.
Filipino dirty ice cream.
Wait, in the UK?
In the UK,
it exists.
Where the fuck do you find dirty ice cream in the UK?
Kentish Town. Mamazon's dirty ice cream.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So
they do.
It's like a store. It's
a like an ice cream parlor. They actually opened up one in Chinatown. Right. That's how good it became.
Wow.
So it was a little ice cream parlor in Kentish Town, which is like near Camden, where you know Progress is held at the Electric Ballroom.
Where Progress is held when they're not in Wembley.
Yes. Oh my god, that is going to be massive. Pete Dunne and Ilya Dragunov.
Oh shit!
That is gonna be holy shit!
Yeah, that's why it's
Okay,
for context, Dirty Ice Cream first.
Like, they market themselves as Dirty Ice Cream. Yes. So how do people in the UK take it?
Oh, amazing! I mean, like they've done really well. Like in terms of, it's weird because it's so off where Camden Town is.
And Camden Town is the weird side.
Yeah, but like that is, well,
it's relatively, like, relatively.
I mean, it's now become like a very touristy place now where people go, but it's like just off the out of Camden, and like so they do all like your Filipino flavors like ube, queso. They do like a calamansi sorbet. They do Milo.
So how does a Londoner who doesn't know anything Filipino react when they hear it's dirty ice cream, or when they see the sign that says dirty ice cream?
Well, I think that's what gets them in, because they like curious.
They like dirty things sometimes.
So it literally is, and they've had a massive cult following, which obviously led to them being headhunted by Chinatown.
Damn.
So it was all like Chinatown came to them and were like, we want you. We want to have. We want you.
We want your
up.
Thing over
yeah,
here.
Yeah, over here. So you know, they actually had their launch last Saturday, which I missed
because you were here.
Because I'm here.
But you know,
but like
you're gonna get a laugh when you go home.
It's a massive deal, like in terms of Filipino cuisine, right? Like having a representation in Chinatown.
Of course,
it's massive.
Yeah. And then there's the follow up that's coming in a couple of weeks, which is Jollibee finally opening.
Jollibee opened up in October. Oh, and there's also a Filipino Japanese ramen place as well, owned by the same guy who did Mama's Ones.
So how big is it for someone like you? Obviously you've lived in the UK pretty much all your life, mm-hmm. right? But you're very much in touch with your Filipino side as well. So how big is it for you to have the Jollibees and the Mama's Ones?
Oh, massive. Massive. I mean, like, I grew up in a Filipino household. You know, my mom and dad are from the Philippines, literally. I did the same things, you know, Filipino barbecues. We had Filipino barbecue. We didn't have...
You just didn't kneel on the mungo seeds.
Oh, I mean, yeah, no, we didn't. No.
You didn't have that type of corporal
No, punch. We didn't have that.
Belt
but,
or slipper?
But, oh, yeah, belt or the chinelas. You didn't have that shit.
Oh, I had that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I had the belt. The chinelas...
Not
maybe,
as much.
Maybe, but the belt, yeah, for sure. All for right, sure, the belt.
That's still Filipino.
Yeah, exactly. Just seeing like representation in that sort of sense in food, because like I think again Filipinos are all about food.
It's the biggest gateway.
Exactly,
it's the biggest gateway.
Exactly, and it's the most unexplored in terms of like Asian cuisine. Like no one knows anything about it.
Well, not anymore.
Not anymore. Yes,
they know we have ice cream.
So these little things like Mama's Day ice cream, Arama ramen, or even like. Manila Kitchen, like
the Manila Kitchen's. It's
no, but this one's actually really good because they have a restaurant. There was a restaurant called Lutong Pinoy, which is like, you know, only like Filipinos go there. And it's like their son opened up his own spot. Yeah, his own spot in this. It's like a food court called Bang Bang Oriental.
Okay, where's it? Where's that?
It's Colindale.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so all you guys, all you listeners who are planning to go to London, please visit these places and try them. Because he does his, like, these are like, they try do a Western take, so it introduces like non-Filipinos to at least the flavors.
Okay.
So he would do like a tocino burger.
Well, tocino burgers are a thing.
It's pretty common here as well.
Of course.
Yeah, like it's a cheap snack, like you can get one for 20 pesos in UP. Yeah, the University of the Philippines.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Jesus, it's like I realized you didn't get the UP food tour yet.
Yeah, you haven't had the UP food tour. All right, so I went to UP for college.
Okay.
So that's my shit. Like, if I would hang out by the main library, right outside, you would have stalls upon stalls of really cheap ass burgers.
Mm-hmm.
You would have the tocino burger for like 20 pesos, which is dirt cheap, right?
Yeah.
And then you'd have the Lucky Me Pancit Canton. They'll open that shit
up.
And they'll cook it right there in front of you, put it on a paper plate, and you get to eat it right there. So, you know, it is
street food heaven.
I love the street food there.
It's all the MSG you could ever want.
Yes.
So yeah, okay. You know, we talked about the food. We talked about how it's big for you, especially since you feel like your Pinoy side is really being represented. Has it transitioned into your wrestling or into your character?
Yes,
100%. I mean, like, what I don't tell people is that I get a lot of my inspiration from Silat,
as in the martial art.
Eskrima. So I watch a lot of that. I think I've spoken to a few like
practitioners.
I think I've mentioned it to like JDL. I think yeah. I spoke to Madrigal.
Yeah, Mike Madrigal.
Yeah, because I know he does at least Muay Thai.
Yeah,
and I was talking.
He's a martial artist.
Yeah, I was talking to him. I was like, you guys, you know, I was like, oh, you should really like watch some of these videos because I can't really learn it, but I know you guys can because you guys probably have better access to like to learning the at least the empty hand stuff. If you look at empty hand silhouette.
Oh, that's like I've seen them like when mm-hmm. they switch from because what they do is they show you with mm-hmm. the knife.
Yeah.
Like with the knife, and then once they switch that out, it's like
yeah. And I'm watching that, being like, wow. I'm like
application.
If I can, so sometimes like when I do certain moves, like I try it out in training, but I know like. You know, the silhouette is meant to break your bones, right? Yeah. It's like designed so...
It's like our version of Krav Maga.
Yeah. So I watch it and I'm like, you know, these guys are doing it safely, right? To each other. So I'm like, oh man, if I could just like do some of that stuff in my wrestling.
It's like
it would be awesome. Like, and it would be a different style. No one, like, it's
there's nothing like it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
No, but how does it work given the Tengu character? Because Tengu is a Japanese yeah. character still, right?
Of course, yes, he is. Yes.
So how does that affect the gimmick, or how do you make it come across that it's uniquely Pinoy when the gimmick is still Japanese?
Yeah, of course. Well, the thing is that like when I've done those moves, like
subtly.
Yeah, subtly. Like I don't. If only I knew how to, if only I was trained in it, then it'd be great.
I was going to say, there's always Bakunawa.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Because Ash has an alter ego outside of Tengu.
Yes.
For those who haven't seen it.
So where I train, the London School of Lucha Libre, it's where they hold Lucha Britannia shows.
Yeah.
And Lucha Britannia shows are...
massive.
Yes, but they're also nuts. Like, I don't know if I spoke to this in the last podcast.
No, you didn't, because it was Bakunawa was after.
Yeah. Yeah, so actually Tengu came by accident, because initially when I trained at the school, I was like, I wanted to do a Filipino character.
Yeah.
Or like, I was like, yeah, I was trying to pitch a Filipino character, but at the time they weren't sure about it, and they were like, no.
Be Japanese.
Yeah, we can't use you. So I was like, okay, we can't use that gimmick because it's not, you know, it's yeah.
It doesn't fit.
It doesn't fit. And
like
I was
like,
okay.
Thought it was obscure? Or?
Yeah, and I was like, okay. So I came up with, you know, one, like, you know, I'm a massive otaku, you know, when I was in school. I was like, you know
You're
what?
A weeb.
Yes, I am.
You're a weeb. Don't
I am.
Spin it.
I am totally. One, because I sound like this. I sound like this also, so... yeah, and I was like, you know, I'm going to come up with a Japanese character. I'm like, you know, it was either the Oni Demon, I had a few, the Kitsune, and I was like, you know what, I come up with Tengu. Like, you know, it's a really striking look. And then I came up
and
with
the
it.
Mask.
And
when the mask came.
Exactly. And when I started working him, and I was doing a few student shows and like really building him up, and I was like, okay, so they wanted to debut me for the Lucha Britannia show. But they were like, oh, but yeah, but Tengu is your thing. Like, you can use that on the indies or like out in, you know, in the UK.
On other promotions.
Yeah, but we have our own characters that we do. I was like, okay. But we would really like you to do a Filipino gimmick. I was like, oh, okay, So, yeah, I mean, and then actually, it wasn't until when with the Native Province, we were doing like an independent film screening and. Spoke to OL about
putting shouts to OL.
OL, thank you so much. And
his thesis film, which is
Bakunawa.
Exactly.
I was in that.
You were in it. Yes.
So is YOLO twin Andrea De La Torre.
yes. So is John Sebastian.
And John Sebastian. Yeah, I forget your last piece in that.
So yeah, and it was like that. That kind of gave me the I got the idea from that. I was like, oh man, like I would like to like. Because I was thinking, I had a lapu-lapu, like, type gimmick, but, you know, I was like...
You have the outfit for it as well.
Yeah, exactly.
But have you put together the gear for Bakunawa?
Like, yes.
How does it look? Is it green as well?
No, it isn't green. It's completely... The colors are based on the Igorot Warriors. So
okay.
They're Igorot colors. So, like, the red.
The deep red.
Deep red. Yellow.
And then it has a sash, right?
Yes, I mean, I wear literally the same thing I wore at the Vendetta. So yeah. I wear that.
Whatever his gear was for Vendetta with a few tweaks.
Yes.
So it's still a masked character.
It is still a masked character.
But do you bark out like Tagalog phrases?
I do hui a lot. I try and put hui. And then, I try.
Okay.
I try.
Is your finisher named in... is the name of your finisher in Tagalog as well?
At the moment, because I've only had two...
That's what I was going to ask. How many outings have...
I've only had two.
So what's the name of the finisher? Or like the move?
I'm not sure. It's
underdeveloped.
It's underdeveloped. Uh-huh. So
yeah, that's...
I know I can't do certain moves, because, well, you know, the frog smash?
Yeah.
Someone else does a frog smash, so I'm like, damn, okay, what am I going to do? So I'm trying to come up with something different for him.
So it's still a work in progress.
It is. I'm just happy to be in it, because, like, again, like, I've trained in that school for so long, and I'm like, you know, to be a part of that team.
That pseudo main roster.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Because Lucha Britannia has produced...
Yeah.
Some of the best names.
Yes.
In British wrestling.
Yeah. You have guys like Will Ospreay, who was on there. Jimmy Havoc also had a run there.
And those two guys are fucking killing it on Progress.
Paul Robinson, who's like one of the fucking...
Legend.
Best heels.
Legend.
Ever. Like, oh my god. If you ever see him, it's like... Oh man, he's a fucking man.
And I have Bakunawa, who's under development.
You have a Filipino. Ooh,
wait, is Bakunawa a face or a heel?
He's at the moment he's tween. He's like one match I was a heel, one match I was a face.
He is what they need him to be, right?
And yes. And you don't really speak in this under this character either.
No, I grunt
and go hoi.
And I go hoi. Yeah.
Alright, I want to talk about the gear since we already touched on that. Mm-hmm. The last time you wrestled here as Tengu. You had the corporate attire gear, right?
Yeah.
You had the long sleeve shirt, you had the vest and all that. How constricting is it to wear that? Because like when I watch Baron Corbin as the constable, I can imagine how uncomfortable that must be moving around in the long sleeve polo and the slacks.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know any other way because I've wrestled that way for so long now.
Why though? Like I don't think we asked this last time. Like,
yeah.
Why did you dress that?
Well, it was for the character because I was going for the whole Yakuza.
And that is the Yakuza getup.
The Yakuza getup.
Actually, now that I think about it, this is something that your dad would probably be interested in waxing philosophical about. Why is it that action stars are always dressed up, like fully dressed up when they know they're going to fight? So like in the Philippines, it's really hot here.
Yeah.
But you see the action stars, they're in their leather jackets or in their denim jackets and they're throwing down.
Yeah.
That's one, that's uncomfortable as shit. Two, it's really heavy. Three, it limits your movement.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not practical.
It's not practical at all.
At times, I think like, oh, like I'm, oh, I could just take off my shirt, but I'm like, I think
you do have the bod.
No.
Compared to other people who have been,
I'm still working on.
I mean, I don't think you'll get any dad bod hits, right?
Yeah, you're not gonna get that.
I mean, one, I think it goes like when you think of my mask, it's red.
Yeah.
And then you have the white.
You need the
like,
contrast.
Yeah.
You need the contrast.
That's very important. I think it's one of the things that like when I've had feedback from a few guys, when I've met people at shows, they tend to talk about like how my image or like, you know, the red and like it's
striking.
It's very memorable and I try and push that.
So that's why that's why you still have the corporate attire on.
Yes.
For lack of a better term.
Yes. And
we just
you know
need
what?
To have you made stretchy pants that
yes.
look formal.
Yes. Exactly.
Wait, so right now you still use the slacks?
Yeah.
Have you ever ripped the slacks in the ring?
No. I mean, I've had to buy some new ones because they were getting
worn.
Thin.
Yeah.
They were getting worn. So these ones are very nice and they'll do me well for the show. So.
I mean, I can imagine that these are clothes you'd alternate between wrestling and a corporate job.
I don't work in a corporate job anymore.
Yay! Let's talk about that. All right. So you mentioned before we started recording that you've left your old job.
Yeah.
What are you up to now as an adult or as a functioning adult?
I work at a ramen place now, which is that Filipino Japanese ramen restaurant
that we referenced
about.
Earlier.
Yeah.
That's why you're showing the fuck out of it.
Exactly. Ramen and wrestling. That's my motto now.
So
and video when you can.
Yes.
Is it like a full-time job where you have to go inside the office and you have deliverables and shit, or is it a work-from-home flexi-time setup?
No, it's a... We go in. They gave me opportunity to work the kitchen, so I'm like I'm a massive ramen connoisseur, which I'm looking forward to trying.
We're gonna try.
I'm really hungry as you speak, so like I'm excited for the ramen we're about to have.
So yeah, and so I do kitchen. I also do like marketing as well.
And do they know that you wrestle?
They do. Yes.
What's the reaction from like say this new employer, right? And they find out that you wrestle.
Well, it's. Pretty much the same. I don't know. What about you, Raph? You get the same reactions, right? You know what? It's a really good icebreaker.
It's an icebreaker, and then like 30 minutes later and 6 drinks. It's like, yeah. Ha ha ha! Can you pick me up, yeah. Yo?
Or it's either they have questions for you.
What are the FAQs?
Yeah, so it's either they're interested to know about what goes on, or... They say, why would you do it if it's fake? You know, the usual stuff.
Yeah.
You get those, and then you get the ones that are like, oh, wow, that's cool. Like, I've never met a person that actually does it, and they can actually hear, you know, what a wrestler goes through instead of the other way around.
Yeah, I mean, I know what you mean, because, like, I'm not a wrestler, but when people find out that I used to be the general manager, or that I'm involved, right, the questions always come. Yeah. So, like, what I get is, like, oh, this guy's, like, the Vince McMahon of the Philippines. Like, that's the number one thing I get.
That's awesome.
Like, I hosted an NBA event several weekends ago, and then the hosts recognized me, and they were like, let's turn you over to the Vince McMahon of the Philippines, like, at the Mall of Asia in front of, like, hundreds of people.
Wow.
So, it's like, oh, thanks, way to put me over. That's I mean, it's not entirely accurate anymore, but it's not bad. I'll take it.
I mean, you were the Mick Foley
of the Philippines. I didn't get cheap pops. I didn't aspire for cheap pops, right?
I was gonna say because my thumb and everything. Because Mick Foley got low blowed a lot too.
Yeah, I did get low blowed a lot. So yeah,
there's that.
So but as we wind down here, clearly we're really, really hungry. We've got ramen on our minds. What are you looking to do before you leave? Like, are there still things on your checklist, whether personally or as a wrestler, that you want to achieve before you guys have to go back to the UK?
Well, from here until... Well, I'm actually leaving on Monday, so... I know.
Oh, shit.
So I just did my whole... yesterday, just did the whole, you know, pass le bon, buy all the stuff for home.
For everyone.
For today, you know, I'm going to hang out with you guys.
And then tomorrow we've got the show.
And then going to hang out after the show.
Oh, God.
I'm just happy that, like, this trip I got to hang out a lot more.
Yeah, because like the last time it was podcast. Yeah. It was podcast that evening, and then after the show, because you were here like it was so short, and you were living so much further out.
Yeah,
and then now it's like, hey, who wants to drink?
Yep, exactly.
No, I think that's the best part. Like, and it probably helps that we already have that 1 year of having gotten to know you.
Yeah.
So like you come in, it's like an old friend comes back.
Yeah.
And I think it's pretty much like that with every other. For lack of a better term, foreign wrestler that we've encountered over and over again.
You mean Invader?
What?
So, you know, like I appreciate it. I think that's one thing I love about the business that we've built here in the Philippines. Like, you guys come in and it's like you guys never left.
This is the wrestling fraternity at large.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yes.
Philippine division.
It's wonderful. Yeah, yeah. It's wonderful. I love it. You know, like Ash comes back. And he's like, hey, how's it going? Like, you know, like we just picked up where we left off last year.
Yes.
So I'm excited for Homefront. I'm excited to see you and JDL just tear the house down.
I'm scared for JDL. Honestly.
Well.
Honestly.
It's going to be fun. He's gonna love it.
It's going to be loads of fun. I think that people are going to lose their minds. I hope people lose their minds.
I hope so, too.
We sort of saw a preview a couple of weeks ago when Ash did the training session.
Oh, that's great.
Don't
spoil shit.
No, there's no spoiler. It's just when the second they touched up, like coincidentally, because he was running the drill, and we just saw it, and just like, fuck, this is gonna be good. This is gonna be good.
It was good to actually be in that place.
So now
I've actually seen where you guys train, because like I always see him in pictures.
Wait, was that the first time?
Yeah, that was his first time.
I wasn't there last. The last time I was there only for the show.
Okay,
so this time, the last time I was at a wedding, so that's why I couldn't come train with you guys.
Yeah, so now you've seen the Bombay Warriors Performance Center.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like Like when
you went grassroots, bro.
I did, yes. I would always see those little videos of when you actually guys did shows there, right?
Yes, yes. Yeah, and we've shot promos there. Like yes. I've been attacked there by Billy Suede. Yeah. I've watched Main Max workout there. So, you know, like we've done all sorts of shit there.
So yeah, for me it was a really important moment for me to go in there.
All right, as we close here, do you have a message for the Filipino fans who are waiting with bated breath for your return to a PWR ring?
But first, I just want to say congrats to Cassius and Greg Burridge for being involved in the Rev Pro tapings.
Hey.
Yes, yes.
Especially like Cassius. Like Cassius, I don't know if I spoke highly of him the last time here.
There was a bit.
Because he's fucking amazing. And Greg.
And just for context again, these are the men that have helped shape your career.
Hey, congratulations, guys.
Yes. Rev Pro!
But yes, of course. I'm just really happy to be here and to all of the Revo Nation. Like, I love you guys. When I first came here, like, your welcoming has really, really stuck it in here. Like, I'm pointing at my chest. I'm pointing at the chest where my heart is.
Right where your heart is. Yeah.
Exactly. I'm doing it's the, there. That thing.
The Korean heart.
The Korean heart thing.
Oh, God,
well.
They
I'm
got giving, you with that.
What a weeb.
Yeah, I'm giving you this. I was out flying.
What a
funny you can see what I'm doing. But yeah, no, I'm excited to see you all again. And like, you know, I would just love to stay here for like a couple of months. But you know, one day there'll be a time where I'll be able to
excursion
to pull a Billy Suede.
Yeah, and you know, wrestle for MWF as well, because they're ones that I want to.
Tarek.
Exactly.
Tarek, if you're listening.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello from all England.
So, yeah, that brings us to the end of the interview. Ash, thank you so much. We're excited for the match.
You.
And we're just really happy as well that you're here.
I'm excited to be here.
Thanks again to our good friend Tengu for joining us for another episode on the podcast. I like that. You know, we have different stories to share this time around. Obviously, he's done way more since we last had him right after Vendetta. And we can't wait to see what shit he comes up with in time for Homefront.
I am really, really, really excited because I got the preview.
Yeah.
I got the preview. And actually, JD called me out on it this week, saying that he hasn't had a pick of the week from us in a long time.
We had a pick of the week last week.
No. For him.
What do you mean?
Picking JD. Picking JD's match.
Oh, okay.
That's the thing that he's said. So I'm like, I have to tell him, I have a feeling that come this time next week, I'm going to be, you know, spazzing about their match.
Here's the thing, though. Like, we can't really pick recent PWR matches as picks of the week because it's going to be hard for people to find. Like, the reason why we do the pick of the week segment at the end is to give you a match or a segment that you can easily find on the internet to just watch, to distract yourself from whatever's
going on in the world
or whatever's going on in your life.
But I feel like that is whatever is going to happen tomorrow is going to end up on, you know, Free Match Friday.
Full Match Friday. You're part of the company.
No, I mean, Free Match, Full Match, Close.
No, it's not close at all. It's just an alliteration as well.
Okay.
So, anyway, let's get to our picks. I'm going to pick the main event of NXT this week.
Bastard!
Champion versus champion. Bastard! Ricochet versus Pete Dunne. It was a great match. I just didn't like the ending, but then again, that was the ending I was absolutely expecting.
It's unanimous pick for this week. I'm sorry. That is the
best. No, you could have picked AJ Styles versus CM Punk. I would have given you shit for it.
I could have, but that match is just, as somebody who's seen a lot of Ricochet over the years and who has grown to love Pete Dunne, holy shit, that match.
Ang galing, kasi I love how Ricochet was able to transition into his ground game, which is a very underrepresented part of his style.
Not on NXT though. He's gone to it more so than he did when he was on the super PWG style that he was running.
Yeah,
and during his
Lucha Underground.
Run. And Lucha Underground even more so.
Yeah, of course, you don't get to see that a lot now from him, but he was kind of forced to because of the way that Pete Dunne was attacking him. So that was really fun. I loved how it was basically a stalemate between two equally matched superstars and how they took each other to the limit, and the only thing that could have stopped the match was the Undisputed Era coming in and breaking
things
up.
And you know, it's one of those, you see it coming a mile away.
Oh. I knew there was no chance in hell either of them would be a dual champion. I mean,
But the idea of it is good.
yes, the idea of it is good, but for NXT, where you don't really have established divisions, let alone contenders,
yeah.
Right? I don't think having dual champions is kind of wise at the moment, so I kind of knew that this was going to happen. So it leads me to the question, does this set up this year's War Games feud?
I think it could, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. I don't think, even if they do, are they scheduled to do War Games?
Yeah, they're scheduled to do War Games this year. I'm pretty sure if they are, the Undisputed Era will be part of it. So I think, I'm going to predict it's the Undisputed Era versus British Strong Style versus War Raiders and Ricochet. And you have the history there.
Yeah, there's enough history between the three. Sige.
Right, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Ricochet and War Raiders have crossed paths.
They were in Taguchi, Japan together.
Perfect.
That's the connection. Exactly. Like, literally, it was them three, Taguchi and Juice Robinson and Kushida. That was the running group for about 6 months, 6-8 months.
Perfect. So there you go. The story writes itself. You've got the New Japan history of Ricochet and the War Raiders. You've got the progress history of British Strong Style. And you've got all this backstory for Undisputed Era. I'm calling it. That's the War Games feud right there. So I think it's safe to say that was your pick of the week as well.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Like,
all right.
Because everything else pales. Because that match was just, you know, you didn't expect it to be this good.
Yes,
you knew it
yes.
was good. You didn't know it was in the conversation for, if the finish wasn't that terrible, this would have been in match of the year conversation.
Right.
There's that.
Okay, that brings us to the end of the podcast. Thank you so much for making it this far. And if Homefront hasn't happened yet, you can still catch it at 2 p.m. either today or tomorrow. Depends on what time we'll get this up. Power Max Center Spotlight. JDL versus Tengu for the Philippine Excellence Championship. And you've got Ralphie Mabayashi versus Cuatro for the PWR Championship. That's your double main event for the show.
Yep.
Hope to see you there. It's going to be a lot of fun. And we hope that by the end of it, we're going to be just as hype and just as excited as we are right now. So on behalf of Romoran, who's still in Singapore, on official business, on behalf of our guest Tengu, on behalf of Raf Gamos, who's always hosting us.
Yeah.
My name is Stan C, and we are out of here.
Peace, goodbye, good night.
Hey, this is for all my kiss stealing, wheeling dealing, limousine riding, jet flying, dripping, son of a guns. Woo!